This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, reporting tonight from Havana.
Good evening. It has been a day rich in historic symbolism, brass tacks diplomacy, and the sober reality that erasing a half century of mistrust is going to be tough. President Obama, who reminded us today he was born the year of the Bay of Pigs invasion, met face-to-face on Cuban soil with 84-year-old President Raul Castro. It's their first meeting on Cuban soil since diplomatic ties were reestablished. Afterwards, they emerged from what turned out to be a tense give-and-take with the press, ending with this awkward clasping of the hands, showing this relationship is still very much a work in progress. Our Andrea Mitchell was among the few called on at that press conference and joins me here now. Andrea, it was uncomfortable to watch it, Mons.
It was uncomfortable, and it's clear Raul Castro does not do press conferences. That was only part of it. The two leaders agreed to disagree on big differences between the U.S. and Cuba, chiefly the U.S. trade embargo, which President Obama would like to end, and Cuba's treatment of dissidents, testing the boundaries of a new relationship.
It was a day of historic firsts. The handshake on Cuban soil. The Cuban military band playing the Star Spangled Banner.
This is a new day. Es un nuevo día between our two countries.
But Raul Castro's blistering criticism of the U.S. trade embargo and social policy did not feel new.
We find it inconceivable that a government does not defend and ensure the right to health care, education, equal pay.
After pressure from President Obama, Castro did take questions from the press, a rare occurrence. But when a Cuban-American reporter asked about Cuba's political prisoners,
what political prisoners? Give me a name or names.
It is an issue overshadowing the visit.
There were dramatic arrests of peaceful protests, the ladies in white. What signal does that send?
If I engage frankly, clearly, stating what our beliefs are, but also being clear that we can't force change on any particular country. Ultimately, it has to come from within.
And for President Castro, what is the future of our two countries, given the different definitions and the different interpretations of profound issues like democracy and human rights?
It's not correct to ask me about political prisoners in general. Please give me the name of a political prisoner. And I think with this is enough.
The exchange fueling criticism by some dissidents who say Mr. Obama is normalizing relations too quickly. Antonio Ridales was detained briefly during Sunday's protest.
The president's argument is, if I come, if we talk, I can make progress.
The American government is giving too much to the regime, and the regime is telling clearly we are not going to move.
Clearly, this is a relationship that is a work in progress, but there are new business deals today in the works for American firms here. Starwood today, Carnival Cruise Lines expected soon. A lot going on, Lester.
Two will be together at a state dinner later
exactly,
on.
Exactly, tonight.
All right, Andrea, thank you very much. As events continue to unfold here, it is a very busy day in the race for president. Donald Trump convening a secret meeting of top Republicans in Washington. Speculation swirling as Hillary Clinton unleashes a stinging attack on Trump over support for Israel. And Elizabeth Warren unleashes an attack of her own, using Trump's own words against him. We have it all covered, starting with NBC's Katie Turr. Katie, what's the latest?
Hey there, Lester. Donald Trump is on the stage here in Washington behind me, addressing the country's largest pro-Israel lobbying group. It's his chance to prove that he has international credibility after a day spent trying to prove that he has political credibility in the town he wants to call home. Mr. Trump goes to Washington, spending the day in the nation's capital, this morning attending an off-the-record meeting with, quote, influential Republicans, including Newt Gingrich, Senators Jeff Sessions and Tom Cotton, and former Representative Bob Livingston.
He's getting most of the votes, and for me, that's very, very important. I want to see the people heard, and I want to see Donald Trump president.
The gathering was hoped to mend fences with the establishment, but House and Senate leadership like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan tell NBC News they were not invited.
Paul Ryan didn't know about the meeting. They said they weren't invited. Was that on purpose?
No, not at all. No, not at all. We're very inclusive. And frankly, Jeff and some of the other people just invited a small group. You have a lot of people out there that you think are against me,
and it's just politicians. They want to make a deal.
Addressing reporters at his under-construction hotel, Trump, who's been criticized for being out of his depth internationally, was trying to clarify his position.
This is how we're going to get our wealth back.
Outlining a non-interventionist platform, even questioning the country's long-standing involvement in NATO.
I think we have to reconsider, keep NATO, but maybe we have to pay a lot less toward the NATO itself.
It's not a serious proposal because we want friends, we want allies who are legally committed to come to each other's self-defense.
The GOP frontrunner addressing AIPAC tonight as his campaign continues to address ongoing violence at his rallies. Another protester sucker punched over the weekend, this time in Arizona. Katie Turr, NBC News, Washington.
This is Peter Alexander in Washington, where Donald Trump today faces one of his toughest challenges yet.
As a lifelong supporter and true friend of Israel.
AIPAC bills itself as America's bipartisan pro-Israel lobby, drawing speakers from both sides of the aisle. Its theme today, Come Together, but some here blame Trump for inciting violence and hatred.
This is not who we are. As people of faith, we don't believe in divide and conquer.
Trump has previously raised concerns among American Jews, first with this casual remark.
Look, I'm a negotiator like you folks. We're negotiators.
Then saying he wanted to be unpredictable in his approach to pursuing Middle East peace.
Let me be sort of a neutral guy. Let's see what I'm going to give it a shot.
Hillary Clinton today slamming that strategy without mentioning Trump by name.
We need steady hands. Not a president who says he's neutral on Monday, pro-Israel on Tuesday, and who knows what on Wednesday. Israel's security is non-negotiable.
Another leading Democrat, Elizabeth Warren, on Twitter branding Trump a loser, citing him for petty bullying, attacks on women, and cheap racism. Trump this afternoon accusing Warren of dividing the country. Here, today's attendees want more details from the frontrunner. Trump this evening looking to silence his skeptics.
8 months till November, this primary season already beginning to feel like a general election. Peter Alexander, NBC News, Washington.
A manhunt is on for a newly named suspect allegedly linked to the Paris terror attacks. He's identified as a possible accomplice of Salah Abdel Salam, who had been on the run for 4 months after the attacks. Now we're getting a striking new look at the moment Abdel Salam was taken down last week. NBC's Keir Simmons has more.
Stunning new images of the moment Europe's most wanted terrorist was captured. This is Salah Abdel Salam, a senior Belgian judicial source, confirming to NBC News. The dramatic video shows his safe house surrounded by police. He bursts out, runs down the street. Officers open fire. Shot in the leg, he is led away. And tonight, police launching a new manhunt for another suspect, Najim Lashrawi, described as dangerous. His DNA reportedly found during recent raids at locations housing explosives. Belgian officials admitting that despite arresting Abdel Salam, who helped drive suicide bombers to the Paris city stadium, they are far from solving the puzzle of how ISIS pulled off the Paris massacre. Abdel Salam reportedly telling interrogators he was preparing more attacks.
Filmed from a rooftop, the arrest of Abdel Salam fleeing from this doorway, shot here on the sidewalk, raises multiple questions. Why did it take 4 months to find him? And how many others are planning attacks?
Intelligence failures before the Paris attacks include allowing known ISIS operatives to return to Europe, buy guns, and prepare explosives. The agencies that failed to track him now scrambling to find other ISIS recruits.
To my mind, this does strike me as an intelligence failure. Abdel Salam has been able to hide out for roughly 4 months in the middle of Belgium.
Abdel Salam's lawyer says he is talking, but he is fighting extradition to France. Last time he was there, he was orchestrating a massacre. Lester?
All right, Keir Simmons tonight, thank you. Back in the U.S. to an investigation at Los Angeles International Airport where a person thought to be a JetBlue flight attendant took off running after being selected for a random secondary screening. It happened on Friday. An investigator said today she left behind her shoes and a bag with 60 pounds of cocaine. NBC's Tom Costello has the details.
In police custody at LAX, neatly wrapped and stacked bricks of cocaine. 60 pounds of it confiscated after a flight attendant allegedly tried to get through a security checkpoint in Terminal 4. Police say the suspect, not in uniform, flashed a JetBlue ID but was randomly selected for a secondary screening. That's when she grabbed her bags and began running from the checkpoint. But she quickly dropped the bags, kicked off her Gucci shoes, then ran down an up escalator. Last seen outside the building running towards Terminal 5. Experts say the fact she got away and the cocaine nearly got through are big red flags.
Today it's employee smuggling drugs. Tomorrow could be an employee smuggling guns. Day after tomorrow could be employee smuggling a bomb.
At LAX, known crew members are not required to go through the same full screening that passengers do, but they can be pulled aside randomly. Fearing an insider threat like the one that may have brought down a Russian jetliner over Egypt last fall, veteran aviation security experts have long called for many more random checks of all airline and airport employees. JetBlue says it's cooperating with investigators. Police are still looking for the suspect and whether she planned to meet anyone on the other side of the checkpoint. Meanwhile, the LAX Airport Police Union says the case underscores why all airline employees should be required to go through full security. Lester?
And welcome back to Havana. Behind me, the Museum of the Revolution. For people with bad credit or no credit, it can be tough to borrow money at an affordable rate. But there's a new kind of lending based more on your future potential than your credit history. NBC's Olivia Stearns explains.
6 months ago, Dave Collier ditched his job in the sagging oil industry and signed up for computer coding school.
People always need apps to be built and data to be managed, and people who can do that are going to be valuable.
But the tuition put him $16,000 deeper in debt. Just 26, Dave now had more than $50,000 in loans and needed to refinance fast. That's when he found Upstart.
I was able to consolidate $22,000 worth of credit card debt, cut my rate in half, and accelerate my timeline for getting out of debt by about 3 years.
In fact, Upstart brought Dave's rate down from as high as 19% to just 8%, saving him more than $5,000. It's the brainchild of Dave Girard. His goal, to help people just like Dave get cheaper credit.
We're in the business of seeing signals about a person that others don't see.
Instead of focusing on your credit history or your FICO score, Upstart bets on your future.
FICO is inherently backward-looking. What you've done with credit in the past, we like to view it as identifying somebody's potential, where they're going.
Upstart asks, where did you go to school? What did you study? How much will you make in the future? And is this a reliable career? Upstart is just one of a growing number of companies shaking up the lending industry. But experts warn these new business models aren't proven.
The jury's going to be out until we're in a recessionary environment and delinquencies and defaults go up. And that's where you can really see, what form of lending was worth the risk and which was not.
Risk Dave Girard is willing to shoulder, while Dave Collier is looking forward to the future. Olivia Stearns, NBC News, San Antonio.
And we're back in a moment with the American hero whom President Obama paid tribute to here in Havana. President Obama began his historic remarks here in Havana today with a tribute to a fallen U.S. Marine. Staff Sergeant Lewis Carden was killed in an ISIS rocket attack in Iraq on Saturday. He was 27 and on the fourth deployment of his decade-long career. Up next, what this historic day means for the sport both the U.S. and Cuba call a national pastime. And welcome back from one of Havana's famous moving tourist attractions, the old cars like cigars and baseball, famous around here. Speaking of baseball, the president tomorrow will attend a game here between Tampa Bay and the Cuban national team. If there's anything that unites our two countries, it is the love of the sport of baseball. And here, as in the U.S., little boys growing up of wanting to someday play in the major leagues.
Baseball. It is also Cuba's national pastime. They start young. And like 13-year-old Noah Tortolo, they dream big.
What do you want in your life?
For me, I want to be a good baseball player. I would like to get to the major leagues and play.
As a kid, Tampa Bay Rays outfielder Dairon Verona had that same dream. And today, following an emotional return to his homeland, 2 years after defecting, he got a hero's welcome. as he practiced for tomorrow's exhibition game, speaking to us through a translator.
It's wonderful. I'm so appreciative of just to be able to be here in my home, breathing in the Cuban air. It's a huge deal for me.
In ballparks and dusty fields across Havana.
So, Junior, you play every day?
Yeah.
Passion for the sport runs deep, often driven by a shot at the majors.
What's your favorite team?
Yankees, huh?
We love baseball since we are little boys. We see, you know, watch baseball on TV, we listen to radio, we go everywhere and people play baseball, and it's part of our tradition already, you know.
There are currently around 18 Cuban players in Major League Baseball. Until now, defecting was the most common route to the majors. But the U.S. has announced changes that could soon provide a legal path for American teams to directly sign Cuban players, putting the next generation of Cuban athletes on a whole new playing field.
It will be great if someday Cuban players can play in the Major League Baseball, but legally.
Do you think he'll make it to the major leagues?
Maybe. I hope so.
Noah, who's coached by his father, says when his time comes, he'll be ready.
How good are you?
Really good. Yeah.
One local baseball expert told us there are 11 million people living in this country, and he expects about 11 million to be watching the game tomorrow between the Rays and the Cuban national team. That's going to do it for us on a Monday night from Havana, Cuba. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.